Today on the Retro Zoo Super Show, you spoony bard. I cannot tell you how long I've been waiting to say those words.
Live from Kakariko Village. Throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting a Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet, the Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Now here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Hello and welcome to the Retro Zoo Super Show. I am your host for today, Kai. I am joined by our producer, Drum. Drum, how are you doing today?
I am functioning normally.
Awesome. That is fantastic news. So, if you tuned in last week, you know that this is actually part two of our discussion on Final Fantasy IV, or as we knew it, for those of us who did play it on the Super Nintendo, Final Fantasy II. And wait, if you haven't listened to it, don't run off. You actually don't need to run off and listen to that one episode first. This where we're kind of discussing different aspects of the game in each one of these episodes, and so it's not something that you actually need to listen to in order. But I do expect you in life to be listening to all of our episodes, of course, because that will help us out a lot. Before we get that, I've actually been playing Final Fantasy for the After Years lately, and gotten through a big chunk of the game. This will be part of our series here is discussing the After Years. For those who don't know, that was a sequel to this particular game that originally came out as WiiWare. I guess what a good decade and a half after the original came out, and it has since been ported to everything, and is available even on your phone. I started out playing the Wii version, and I bought it before the Wii Shop closed. And so it was like, you know, yeah, it was one of those things. It's like, you know, the Wii Shop is closing. Let me snag the games that I had intended to buy before it closes. And I did that on that particular one. And then put it aside because I knew that I would want to review it for this podcast. And, I got on and I played the first chapter, which we'll get into later, but it's actually both Cyodor's and Kane's chapters combined, on the Wii version. And then I found that, I was supposed to have downloaded the other parts of the game, from the Wii Shop before the Wii Shop closed. And I didn't realize that I had not downloaded the entire thing, which is kind of a bummer. And so I was like, at the end of that chapter, it's like, well, there's nowhere to go forward. And so I booted it up on emulator and I kind of started over. Now Cyodor, it's the PSP version. So Cyodor and Kane's story are now separate. So I've done most, I guess over half of the chapters now. And, most of them are at least pretty good. We'll go in detail on them. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are very good. There was one chapter that was not good. And it's really disappointing because it's actually one of my favorite characters. But yeah, the chapter was just boring. And we're kind of getting close to the end. I think I have a couple of chapters to do before Kane's story. But I've already played, I'll have to, of course, replay Kane's story, but I already know what happens because I already played it on Wii. And so I'm getting kind of a better picture of what's going on. And it's interesting the way they have that game set up. But that's going to be in a few episodes that we will do a deep dive into that game as well. It's gotten a lot of like justified criticism. I'd say it's gotten a lot of unjustified criticism too. Parts of it are really, really good. It probably deserves more love than it gets, but it is certainly not the original. But today we are actually going to get into the original, into Final Fantasy IV more. We talked about kind of the development and release last episode. Today we're going to talk about the plot. And, as we get there, I'm not sure, how far into the plot that we're going to get, but there will be some spoilers, at least. I'm going to talk about the plot at least long enough to get the themes in, and then we will chat about those themes some more. But first, we've got a public service announcement. With our reporter in the field, Stefan Stevenson. Stefan, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course, Kai. Thank you for having me.
So this is really a tragic story. We definitely want to get the word out here as much as possible, so that people might be able to help out with this situation, but we have, unfortunately, we have a missing child report to report on, and you are there at the scene. What's happened so far?
Yes, of course, it is a very tragic scene. It was unfortunately the case where a father is taking his daughter Cheryl Mason on vacation, and after a car crash, she just completely turned up missing.
That's really terrible. So what happened there? It's like, was she ejected?
Yeah, it's very unclear. The father, whose name is Harry, was knocked unconscious in the crash, and when he woke up, that she was simply gone.
Oh wow. Did anybody see her go?
No, there were no witnesses. He said he was swerving to avoid someone in the road, but there have been no witnesses so far.
Okay, that's really tragic. So, if people want to help, are there any like manhunts being organized there?
Oddly, no. In fact, there's not really anybody here. No one has shown up to help at all, and that seems very unfortunate. It's very difficult. It's going to be a very difficult hunt here. It's exceedingly foggy for this time of year, and it is very, very difficult to see very far ahead of you, and so I'm not sure exactly what might be able to be accomplished in this.
Oh wow. Okay, it's just Harry and the police doing this manhunt in the middle of a foggy town.
No police.
Wait, no, I mean the what do you mean no police?
I'm not sure how to explain it. It might be just the weather or the fog. There doesn't seem to really be anyone here. Here at all, and so yes, it's so far, it's Harry and it's me. just kind of looking around. He is heading over to the diner right now, and hoping to find some people there who might be able to help him or call the police.
That's really weird.
Yeah, no one is answering the phone at the police department. It's very, very odd. It's one of these small towns, though, you know. You probably never even heard of it. It's called Silent Hill.
No, I haven't.
Now that I say that, actually, I do seem to be hearing something down this street right here. I'm going to investigate. Hold on. I'm walking down the street. It sounds like chanting, like perhaps a cult of some sort is chanting. I'm gonna go over there and see if I can find out any more information, and I will call you back with an update.
Yeah, Stefan, that sounds good. Just keep me updated on that. We're definitely our thoughts and prayers are with Harry Mason and his daughter, and hope this resolves itself soon. Definitely hope that, you know, the police apparently need to get organized or something over there. But we will tune back in as needs be. So thank you very much. All right. I hate to, you know, go off this kind of a downer situation in talking about just a really, really great game, but these things, you know, we've got to do what we can and to help spread the word, and so that's what we're trying to do. So if anybody does have any information, you might try the Silent Hill Police Department. Maybe a neighboring town can send a cop over to help investigate. I'm not sure, but we will go from there. So Final Fantasy IV. I mentioned in the last episode that this was actually the first JRPG that I owned. I did play Dragon Warrior when I was at my cousin's house. I was there for a week, and he got the free copy from Nintendo Power at the time, and we played the snot out of it during that week. And, not knowing what we were doing, it probably took us longer to level than it would. I mean, certainly it would take me now in Dragon Warrior, because I know all the secrets now. But we played the snot out of that game. I'm trying to remember if we did beat it or if we came ridiculously close. And I think we might have beaten it in that week. But memory is failing me on that point. But obviously I have beaten it several times since then. But Final Fantasy II came out, and I was just right off the bat, all I heard were really good things about this game. You know, Nintendo Power was pushing it, and I had a friend at school who got it and was just in awe of it. That same cousin got it, and it was something that I was very familiar with even before I got a copy of the game. It was actually one that, you know, for those of us who were playing it, we talked about, you know, like the plot points quite a bit, especially in some key moments, and there are some just really groundbreaking moments in this, and that all starts even at the very, very beginning, where, you know, there's something about the character of Cecil that is different than what we're used to in a JRPG. We normally have a character that has some legitimate reason that, you know, that he's going to be the hero of the land. And a lot of times it's like prophecy or lineage. And, you know, it's like, it's like so many other, like, Dragon Warrior stuff. It, like, starts off, it's like, it is your 16th birthday, now go save the world. And you kind of wish that somebody had given you some training before your 16th birthday, so you'd be a little bit higher than level 1. But that's where we all start in these games, is as level 1, as somebody who is thought of as a hero, and yet has not proven it yet. Cecil is actually the exact opposite. Cecil is the captain of the Red Wings, which is kind of like the Air Force for the Kingdom of Baron. So he's in control of all the airships that go around bombing other kingdoms at will. And he starts off at level 10, which is kind of a mind-blowing concept that this is a guy who has been trained as a soldier, who is now an officer in what is equivalent to the army or the Air Force, who is accomplished, who has risen to a position of authority. But he's not, by anyone, considered a hero. Not even really by his friends, which we will see as we go. We start off, really, I mean, not even in medias res, like not in the middle of things, but in the aftermath of the thing. When you are on the airship and you're going home from your mission, you're on the way back. But the mission is not sitting well with anyone on the ship. And they turn to you and it's like, why are we doing these things? And then you have a flashback to what just happened. And you were in a town called Mysidia. And Mysidia is not in Baron. And so, you know, the initial question is, why is the Air Force of a foreign nation in this land? And they're demanding the crystal, and no reason is given for their demands of the crystals. Just, no, give me the crystal. And this is a town of wizards. And so the wizards try to resist, but are met with deadly force. And Cecil steals this crystal from the town elder. And so this is like really like weighing on literally everyone on the ship, including Cecil. And like one of the people on the ship just tentatively, like, you know, it's like, hey, should we have been doing that? And then a couple more chime in, but that's all just echoing Cecil's own thoughts on the matter. It's like, this was not what he was expecting. And he's very unsure about what just happened. And so they land and they go in, and Cecil goes to the king of Baron, and hands over the crystal, but then stops on his way out and asks, it's like, you know, but essentially, why are we doing this? And in response to that demand, the king strips Cecil of his rank. And it's clear that this is not an expected response. You know, it seems like from Cecil's point of view that this is not a nation that just had such, you know, just such vigorous punishments for even asking questions. You see that in Cecil's treatment of his own men who bring up these things. He's not like kicking them overboard or anything like that. But Cecil is stripped of his rank, and he's sent on a mission to deliver a package to the town of Mist. And at that same time, his friend Cain, who is a dragoon, and we're going to get to those things in just a second here, comes in and tries to defend Cecil. And so he too is sent on the mission. Clearly as punishment for what they were doing. And so, they're to leave in the morning. And so Cecil returns to his room, where he is met by his girlfriend Rosa, who is a white mage. And I'm really struck by the difference in, like, the color palette used for all these characters. And Rosa sticks out very clearly as the white mage character. You know, she's got some like greens and grays in her outfit, but for the most part, she's wearing like a white cape. Everything about her sprite is just a little bit more bright than those things around her. Contrasting that to Cecil himself, who is a dark knight, and his colors are very dark blue. to purple and black. And Cain is also a blue. It's a lighter shade, but these are two men who wear just these full body armor and they're clunking around. And then here's this woman who is just radiant. And that contrast is very, very intentional, that, you know, that we are starting to see as the audience that Baron perhaps was not always so, but has become a dark place. And Cecil actually belongs there. Rosa does not. And that's one of the conflicts that Cecil's going to go through, is that this is the way he was trained. This is the way he fights. This is the way he was always taught to go about things. And how do you break that? That same conflict is in Cain. This is going to be one of the major themes in this story, is how to battle the darkness when you're part of the darkness. And the answer that Cain and Cecil come to are completely different answers, and also explain part of what happens to them along the way. So down to their classes, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is part of the gameplay mechanics, but dragoons are fighters. They use spears, and their thing is they can jump super high and then come down on you with that spear, and that hurts a lot. Dark Knights, this is one of the areas where the American version kind of loses something from the Japanese version. Dark Knights in the Japanese version have this power of darkness that actually starts whittling away your hit points to be used as an offensive weapon, and so you're literally draining yourself of life in order to attack. And that actually becomes important later. We don't get that in the American version. We just have the class of Dark Knight, who just is a knight of darkness, I guess, you know. But the imagery is very clear, you know. Cecil has taken on this image of darkness in order to do his job. And we find out from his conversations with Rosa that it's very heavy on him. He feels it like seeping in, that it's not just the suit of armor he wears. It's actually doing these evil things has a corrupting element to it. So Cain and Cecil start out in the morning, and they go through the Mist Cave, which is going to lead them to the town of Mist. And inside the Mist Cave, and this was amazing, at the time, you know, this is our first dungeon where we actually get to play, and it's very misty, which we expect from like a mist cave, but it's got this just really cool, sweeping, mysterious music that's very ethereal in the background, and it's not a song of, like, you know, action adventure. It's a song of mystery and dread. And that just puts like this cool spin on this cave. So at the end of the cave, you fight the mist monster that comes out of what else? The mist. And you defeat it, and you go out and you visit the town of Mist. Now, here's where things, like, as an audience, we might have picked up on the subtle clues that, you know, Cecil and Cain were not meant to come back from this mission. And that is actually correct, that when they enter the town, the package they were carrying explodes into what was essentially a magical bomb that is setting the town alight in fire. And they immediately see, as the town is catching fire and they're just shocked at what has happened, they immediately see a young girl, you know, kneeling over the body of her mother. And you're immediately thinking, oh, goodness, that stupid bomb from Baron killed her mother. But no. So the town of Mist is a town of summoners. Callers in the original, and they have these monsters of magic that are connected to them and able to be summoned for battle to fight alongside of them. And the mist dragon that you just killed was this woman's called monster or Eidolon in future translations, not in the original. And in killing it, you killed her. And so all of a sudden, Cecil and Kane are realizing, oh my goodness, we've kind of double whammied this place, and this is not good. Kane responds as a good soldier should, you know. It's like, well, okay, this little girl has survived. We need to take her back to Baron, and they'll, follow our orders. But Cecil has had enough. He is not going along with this at all, and is going to say, no, this is not what's going to happen here. And it's like, no, we've done enough. We need to get this girl to safety. Meanwhile, the girl turns out to be quite a summoner of herself and summons her friend, the Titan, to start wrecking havoc on the mountain range around them, eventually collapsing the mountain on one side of the town and leaving Cecil unconscious in a field. When he wakes up, the little girl is with him, but Kane is not. And so he picks her up and carries her to the next town, which is Kaipo. The girl, when he's there at the inn, some soldiers from Baron come to collect her, saying, "Hey, we've heard you brought a caller here." And Cecil fights against them, and this is the moment of truth. You know that he was talking big when he was in Mist, but now it is do or die time. You know what's going to happen here is I'm no longer with Baron. That they are now my enemy. And as he's killing the soldiers, that point is proven. The girl, whose name is Rydia, sees this and realizes that he is also a victim of Baron. Certainly not in the same way, but that he's having a moment of repentance here. And she greets that repentance with forgiveness. And they set out the next day. So when they do get up, they find that Rosa has heard about this tragedy in Mist and has left Baron to go search for him, only to contract desert fever once she's gotten into Kaipo. Now, there's a cure for this. It's the cure is the sand ruby, and it can be found over near Damsian. And so they just need to go through the underwater waterway in order to reach Damsian. And that is where we find one of my other favorite characters of the game. And if I haven't mentioned already, Cecil is my favorite character in video game history. Rydia is my favorite female character in video game history. And so that ranks the characters in this game pretty darn high amongst my favorite characters of all time. But we're going to get to Tella right after this. Hey Drum, did you know that the Techno Funk Boy isn't just a group of podcast hosts that live inside a Super Nintendo?
Really?
That's right, we're also a band.
Tell me more.
We're a retro gaming inspired band that plays covers of classic video game themes, original game music, and other music in the style of classic games.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and you can find our first full-length album on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. It's called The Final Fantasy Mixes, and it's an EDM tribute to some of Uematsu's best musical themes. Check the episode notes for links or go to Techno Funk Boy to learn more.
Techno Funk Boy sounds like the greatest band that has ever existed.
I programmed him to say that. So Tella is this great character. He is an aging mage who is kind of going to carry Rydia, who is very underleveled at this point, because at Kaipo she was level 1, and Cecil is probably up a few levels from 10 at this point. And so, Cecil's not going to be able to carry the weight through the underground waterway. And so Tella appears as kind of the super powerful character who has all these tons of spells. It is very, very high level. The thing with Tella is he's very aged, and he has forgotten a lot of his spells, and he has these massive gaps in his spell list of like super important spells, but nonetheless, he's got some great, great spells. But he is off looking for his daughter Anna and a bard that she had run off with to elope. And obviously Tella does not approve of this marriage at all, and so is out to go get them. And so you go through the underground waterway, which does not have any plot significance to it, so we're going to just walk right through it. But it is a very, very cool level. You reach the other side of the mountains through this, where you get to Damsian, and as you reach Damsian, you're going into the pass to get there, you see the Red Wings bombing the castle. And so, of course, you rush to the top, and you find that Anna has been mortally wounded because of these this bomb. And the bard enters, and Tella goes into a battle against him. And that is where we get, and he's just yelling insults. And everyone's favorite insult in this is, as he's attacking, he yells out, "You spoony bard." The bard will not attack back. He's trying to explain something, but Anna finally interrupts the battle and calls them over and tells them to stop fighting. But she dies, and Tella, in anger, leaves and storms off. We then learn that the bard is actually no bard. He's the prince of Damsian, Edward, who just likes to play the harp. And he is an interesting character, but the most worthless member of the party in the game. He's not going to help that much, but we do need him again so that Rydia does not die. And he agrees to help find the sand ruby. And so you go down. The notable thing about this is, as you're facing the ant lion, who is this monster that I forgot exactly how it works, but the ant lion is the thing that produces this sand ruby. As they go down to do that, the ant lion, who is normally tame, attacks them. And so it's one of the themes. The monsters are getting meaner in this world, and no one's sure why. You get the sand ruby. You return to Kaipo. Rosa is healed. Edward has a vision of Anna, who encourages him to kind of go on with his life and to help Cecil and all. He decides, with new resolve, to join you in your quest against Baron. So you've kind of figured out by now that the Red Wings are going after all the crystals. And the next crystal, the Crystal Wind, is in Fabul. And so to get there, you have to cross this mountain range, now named Mount Hobbs, where you find this monk named Yang. Now he's being attacked by these monsters, and you help him out defeat it. And you find out he's, very, very well respected guy in Fabul, but you let him know what's going on. So you rush down to Fabul to ward off the attacks. And so you have this really cool scene there of the attack coming in. You start off, outside the gates, but you're constantly being pushed in. It reminds me a lot of the scene from Two Towers, when you're Helm's Deep and they're constantly having to move farther and farther into the castle for more protection. I wouldn't be surprised if that was what was in mind when they originally wrote this scene. But it's a very, very cool series of battles that culminate in you being in the crystal room to help defend against the Red Wings' assault. So this is where the door to the crystal room opens and you're ready to fight, but it's Kane. And Kane has come back. And Cecil's, of course, thrilled, but then Kane attacks Cecil. Rosa intervenes, but that's when a new character of Golbez arrives. And this is the first moment we have with this new villain of the game, and he's very much a Darth Vader type figure, and wears this great black armor. He's very, very cool and scary, and he pretty much whoops everybody. Cecil expresses his concern for Rosa, and so of course Golbez kidnaps Rosa and takes the crystal and heads out. Undaunted, now Cecil has even more reason to hate Baron and realizes we need to go save my girlfriend. And this is where now Rydia, Edward, and Yang join him to go track down the Baron, to find a way to save Rosa and to overthrow the king. So they get on a boat and they're sailing over to Baron, when of course they are attacked by the Leviathan, which causes a shipwreck and everyone to go stumbling. And Cecil wakes up on the shore of a faraway land, and it's not until you get into the closest town where you realize where you are, and it's Mysidia, the town at the beginning of the game that you murdered some people and stole from. And this moment is really, really cool, because so far everything that Cecil has tried is failing. No matter what he does, he is just behind the curve. It's not enough. One of the cool imageries that happen in this game is as Cecil finds more and more equipment, that equipment, the names of the equipment is actually just getting darker, to the set of equipment that you have as the Dark Knight is all black armor and the black sword. And the imagery is really clear here. What Cecil is doing is he's trying to get stronger in darkness in order to be stronger than the other darkness. But that keeps failing him. And now he's alone on the beach in a hostile land in front of people that he just murdered. And those are the people that he has to get help from. And so you drag yourself in town, and it's really cool. If you try to buy something from the shop, they way overcharge you. If you try to talk to people, they have nothing but insults for you. There's a couple black mages that will turn you into a frog, I think there's a couple of them that will either turn you small or turn you into a frog, and you have to go in and talk to the elder, and it's this incredible moment where I think Cecil is learning, like with Rydia, that the only way to move forward here is in repentance, is in the rejection of that which came before. Not trying to get stronger in what came before, but the outright rejection of it. And so the elder of the town understands this and realizes you've got to move, reject that darkness within you. And the way to do that is to go to Mount Ordeals to try your worth and become a paladin, a holy knight. And this is one of the most memorable parts of the game. A lot of people are surprised it happened so early in the game. But the story of Cecil's of repentance is not the full story. It's the application of who he is becoming that is the real story. He is sent with two twins, Palom and Porom. Porom is the girl, and they're both very, very young. She's the girl. She's a white mage. And Pelham is the boy, and he is a black mage. And together they have twin magic, which is very powerful, but they both have to cast it at the same time in order for it to work. And so they are escorted to Mount Ordeals by those two. And when they are there, they meet up with Tella. Now, Pelham is just, you know, is... Pelham and Porom know who he is right away. And Pelham isn't a polite boy, but it's clear that, you know, this is clearly just a great man. And he is on the mountain searching for the power of Medio, which is the shortened version of Meteor, because there's only so many letters that can put in the spell list. Because he wants to get rid of, he wants to get revenge on Golbez for what has happened. And so, Tella joins, and you go up to the top, where, first of all, you encounter the first of Golbez's archfiends. Now, we have a cutscene of Golbez sending out these monsters, but there's four of them, and they take the form of an element, and they're some of the kind of major bosses of the game. The first one, and I do use the SNES names for this because this is what I grew up with, is Mylon. The more permanent name that every edition has had since then is Scarmiglione, and but I've always called him Mylon, so I don't, you know, I can't get that other name in my head. But you face him off with him. That everything on the mountain is undead, and so is Mylon, and so once you get through with him, you enter. You're welcomed into this shrine, and Cecil starts hearing this voice calling him inside, and there he enters this light that transforms him, and you know, when the light comes off of him, he's no longer wearing the black armor, he's no longer wearing the carrying the black sword, all of that is removed. And his sprite goes through a dramatic transformation into something much more radiant, much, you know, actually more radiant than Rosa, but kind of along those same lines, that he is now a point of light on the screen and not a point of darkness on the screen. And, he's given a sword, the sword of a paladin, and he becomes the paladin. But in the mirror, he is still a dark knight. And as you notice this, you're told that Cecil has to defeat his former self, which is really hard because now Cecil is level 1. Now remember this, Cecil started off the game as level 10. He's never been level 1 before. This is one of the really cool things about this moment, is that Cecil has to give up everything. You know, he'd worked so hard to get stronger and stronger in darkness, but in rejecting that, he is surrendering literally everything. His equipment, his levels, his hit points, his strength, all these things are laid aside. And so, how then do you beat this Dark Knight? Well, this is where the Japanese version actually makes a lot more sense than the American version. Because in the Japanese version, remember I told you that Cecil has this dark power, but it steals some of his life every time he uses it. The secret of this battle is that the Dark Knight Cecil will keep using dark power against you. But in so doing, he's killing himself. And that is the weakness of the darkness, is that it's self-devouring. And so you can do many things in this battle, but you know, the way you're supposed to play it is just to keep healing yourself, to keep parrying and healing yourself, and you don't have to attack at all. And Dark Knight Cecil will kill himself, trying in his rage to defeat you. So this is not very far into the game, but this is where This is where Cecil's true story begins. And we see him because he will, and this is, you know, I warned y'all about spoilers, but he will, by the end of the game, be the King of Baron. But to be that, he has to therefore prove himself to be worthy. His repentance has been accepted. He's been washed clean. He's born anew. Now he has to write the story of what's essentially, to borrow a phrase from another Final Fantasy game, as a warrior of light. And that's where his true story begins. And that story is filled with forgiveness for others, particularly Cain, and grace, and self-sacrifice. And this is where he proves himself to be worthy of the throne. So we've gone actually quite a while here. So there's a couple of points that we should summarize. Is that the party that Cecil's going to surround himself with is a party that is very keen on that self-sacrifice. The only real permanent death in the game is Tellus, because when he finally gets Golbez, he unleashes Medio. And he's too weak to actually cast it properly. And so he has to destroy himself to do it. Now, mechanically, what's happening there is Tella is so old that as he levels up, his stats actually go down. He's just getting weaker with age. But he never has more than 90 magic points in the game. But he, a Medio costs 99. And so there are some glitches you can use to get him to cast that spell, but in general, you wouldn't really actually need to. He would not be able to cast this in battles, but when he fights Golbez, he essentially destroys himself and dies in order to defeat Golbez. That sacrifice actually shakes the spell that Cain had been under. So Cain's story is very different. Cain is trying throughout the game to fight that same darkness that Cecil is, but he never has that moment of surrender that Cecil did. And so Cain remains susceptible to dark magic the entire game. And so there's a couple of times where Cain betrays Cecil and the party to take crystals away. But this is a game of redemption. This is a game of forgiveness. And Cain is part of the party at the very end that faces off against the final bad guy. Now, what's really interesting, and this is actually going to take us into the after years because I love the way they do this, but at the end of the game, Cain does not attend the wedding of Cecil and Rosa because he is over at Mount Ordeals trying to figure out how to atone for his sins. And I don't think he fully figures out until the after years that he can't, that there's no price that he can pay to make up for the death and destruction that he caused, that he essentially must seek mercy instead. And that's the struggle that he constantly has, is he never wants to just let that to in essence repent of what has happened and move forward in the light instead of trying to justify the deeds of darkness. There's a particularly powerful moment. I'm going to bring up this moment. There's too many of just these great moments to tell. Like, we've barely gotten into maybe the first third of the game and, quickly running out of time. So I just don't want to dwell on this too much, but there's some moments that are going to carry over into the after years. And so we might as well bring them up. The sacrifice of the twins. The twins are some of my favorite characters as well. Their interaction, Porom is much, 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 much more mature than Palom. And we see that also in the after years. He never quite grows up. But they are, when they finally get to Baron Castle and they face off and they find out that is actually one of the four elemental fiends that is in the throne of Baron pretended to be the king, and they had killed off the king some time ago. But once they defeat him, he sets off a trap that is going to crush them in a hallway. And Palom and Porom sacrifice themselves, turning themselves into stone to keep the walls back and prevent them from dying. And it's an exceedingly powerful moment. And there were all these rumors going around, around playgrounds on, you know, there was a way to, you know, to revive them. And there's not. The elder from Mysidia does come to them later, and much, 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 much later in the game, and is able to free them from the stone. And so they are, you don't ever play with them, as in the party again, but they are revived, by the end. We have similar, self-sacrifices from Yang and Cid. Cid we haven't mentioned before, but he's the airship engineer who joins your party for a while. Very, very cool character. Neither one of their sacrifices is permanent as well, but it does sideline them for the rest of the game. And this is one of the constant themes, is the self-sacrifice of standing between the darkness and your friends, and saying, to borrow another great fantasy, series phrase, you shall not pass. And, we see this over and over and over again in the game. The game gets increasingly science fiction, and you do end up on the moon. I'm mentioning these things because they will also tie into the after years, where you find out that the voice you heard at, when Cecil became a paladin was Cecil's father. And Cecil's father was a Lunarian. It's a separate race that looks human, but exceedingly long lived. Most of the Lunarians are in slumber, inside the second moon above the world. But there's this darkness within the moon that is coming out. And, Cecil and his brother are both half Lunarian. And that brother is Golbez. Golbez is the spells over him are eventually broken, and he is able to join up with another awake Lunarian named Fusoya to try to fight. But at the end of the game, Fusoya and Golbez both leave in the moon. And Golbez did not think that he would be able to kind of live down what he had done. Again, we get that theme of repentance and forgiveness. In an extremely powerful moment, you know, of when Cecil and Golbez say goodbye. It's really, really cool. But that keeps tying in to these overarching themes that, you know, essentially, you know, like out of everybody that closely tied to this plot, Cecil's the one that's able to resist. And that's because Cecil turned over everything, gave up everything in his willingness to be essentially holy. To be in the light instead of the darkness. Extremely cool themes going throughout this game. And, Cecil's growth and his leadership throughout the game is very, very cool. That's why he is my favorite character in any video game I've played. Rydia has drifted down into the land of the summoned monsters, and she has aged abnormally fast there. And so when she returns to the party, she's an adult and she's extremely powerful. I have this thing when I go, cause, black magic users will get Medio at level 60. So if you can get Cecil to level 60 before Rydia rejoins the party, then she'll rejoin the party over 60 as well. And it's in a fight against Golbez that she returns. And I like doing that just because Rydia comes in and I can have her cast Medio right away. And it's just like this nice touch that's like, ah, you know, you were impressed when that old man did it. How about this young girl? And I have a lot of fun with that. But Rydia's story as the most clear victim of the game is downright inspiring. And her willingness to forgive, because, you know, Cecil literally killed her mom, not knowingly, but he did. And her willingness to forgive and to choose to see the light in him rather than the darkness is really great thing about Rydia. And, this one, she's one of my favorite characters in video game history as well. So for those of you who have actually seen like videos from the Techno Funk Boy channel, and we are on YouTube, we do videos. There's so much Final Fantasy IV stuff behind me, you know, that, this is kind of how I've decorated my areas. Most of it has been Final Fantasy IV. And that's because it's like, I don't ever get tired of this game. I can play it over and over and over again. And I have, and it's a blast, and it's a lot of fun. And something I cherish in my memories of gaming is hitting these moments for the first time. And, the moment where the twins sacrifice themselves it just hits you like a brick wall. Like you weren't expecting it, but it hits you like a brick wall. The first moment I saw Cecil, become a paladin, it was just inspiring. And, these are things I absolutely love about this game. So, I appreciate you tuning in today. We are going to keep up, our series on Final Fantasy IV. And we're going to talk about the sequel. We're going to talk about the music some. I'm trying to line up some other guests as well, to see if, we can do some more with this game. But, I really do appreciate you listening in. Please do, find us on Facebook. Our Discord link is in the description. If you look up Technoverse in Discord, you will find us as well. And if you aren't so inclined, we have a new tier and we have a new goal on Patreon. We're getting up some new content for our patrons as well. And I hope that you will help out with that goal if you are able to. The goal is essentially to get us into the black, where Stephen and I are not losing money every month, to bring you this show. And it's not a lofty goal. We don't spend a ton of money on the show, but we do want to we would like to stop losing money, not ever expecting to make money off of it, but it would help us out a lot if you are able to. If you're not able to, please don't feel bad about that. We are more than happy to provide this show for free. And, if you do want to help us, but not able to help us financially, please do leave a rating and review on your favorite, podcast catcher on, Apple Music or whatever the case may be. And share it with some friends. I appreciate it. I hope that y'all have a great day, and we will see you with more Final Fantasy IV next week.
Super Show is brought to you by the Techno Funk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Techno Funk Boy, on Facebook at the Techno Funk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technofunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and new play clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. Unless you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.